Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, almost Alan. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Day two after the big debate. We're still unpacking a lot of things. We're still asking questions. I saw an interesting video. I don't think I shared this. I should have, but I don't think I did. From Al Jazeera News, asking the question, why did we not mention Syria? Syria was not mentioned. ISIS was mentioned. Iraq and Afghanistan, these were all mentioned, but we didn't mention Syria. We didn't talk about Aleppo. We didn't talk about the humanitarian crisis. We didn't mention any of this. So I think that's worth talking about. We'll discuss that. Also, now that we've had a little bit of time to dig more into this and look at maybe what could potentially be in store, we'll look ahead at the next two and say, where are these going? We got a town hall, and we have the final debate with Chris Wallace as the moderator. What are these? What are the dynamics here? And of course, in all of this, as Catholics, as faithful, how do we look at all of it? All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour. Follow me over on Facebook. And I promise I don't just put things over there to try to stir the pot. That is not what I'm doing. I assure you, I'm not there just to try to cause consternation. Is that the word? That's not what I'm there for. That's not what I do. That's not why I do what I do on Facebook. I legitimately ask questions. I'm trying to explore some ideas and have honest discussions. So that's what it's about. Join me over there if you wish. But I posted this, and I guess maybe I don't really know what the beef is. Maybe I hear a couple of things, and specifically what I'm talking about is with the Clinton Foundation. Now, you know, I look at somebody like Bill and Melinda Gates. When I say somebody, I mean those two. I look at their foundation, and here is here's a guy who's been immensely, ridiculously successful, a ton of cash that he can do a lot with. And in people who get on that level of success, they should look for the opportunities to give back. And they have. And they have a foundation, and they shelter tax, they shelter income through a tax deduction there. And they support their causes. Now, I don't agree with everything the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation supports, as I doubt, and I haven't looked at all of the platforms, I've looked at some of them, that the Clinton Foundation supports. I'm sure that I would not agree with every one of them. But at the same time, you can't disagree with the practice, because this is time-honored. It's what people do when they reach a certain degree of income, where they can legitimately say, okay, we can build another platform for philanthropy. We can build this opportunity to give back, and we can do it legitimately with the maximum deductions that they can take, charitably put it in the foundation, and then let the foundation do the work as far as either directly funding or granting that money into other initiatives. So there's nothing wrong with that. And I've heard a lot of criticism like, well, you know, I saw a video on Facebook that the charitable deductions match the contributions to the foundation. Well, yes, right? This is not some sort of groundbreaking, oh my goodness, look at what this has unearthed type of stuff. It is what it is. Now, of course, everyone's trying to pin James Comey into the foundation, some sort of triangulation between Lockheed Martin and Comey's connection. Now, yeah, the thing that I said about Comey, I do believe it appeared as though what he was saying when he said it regarding the Clinton emails looked almost like it was a forced statement. And if you recall, when he came out and said what he said, essentially saying anybody else, for anyone else, this would be a problem for Hillary Clinton. It is what it is. Yeah, I thought that was fishy. I gotta admit, as soon as I saw it, I thought, there's something. It just seems a little bit too stilted. And then, of course, again, to build the caveat in the findings to say, anyone else, this is criminal. For her, it's just careless. So, it brings up speculation. It makes you ask these questions. It makes you wonder what maybe is below the surface. What are we not seeing? I get it. I understand that. But at the same time, we don't have to go look for everything all the time to say, this is illegitimate. This is wrong. We can't support this. It just contributes to the greater polarization. And anytime that's our, that's a result, even if it's not our desired intent, I think sometimes people just want to polarize. I mean, are you kidding me? There's plenty who want to make it everything in us and them, us against them, not in us and them. And it's just ridiculous to always play that game. And especially when we can at least look at something and say, okay, why do we criticize this? Again, there's plenty of stuff to criticize. If you really want to get down to the issues, you want to get down to the principles, the platform, we talk about this all the time. Let's look at that. Let's not get into the crazy. Don't go into the conspiracy theories and say, well, it's all because of foreign donors into the Clinton Foundation that makes everything crooked and illegitimate. We can't say that. Can't say that. We don't know. Let's stick to the issues. Let's stick to the stuff that we know. Let's talk about the fact that, yes, we will see a continued expansion of government, like it or not, if Clinton is elected president. We'll see any hope of any pro-life legislation coming across a Clinton presidency desk will not be signed. We know that. There's plenty we can talk about. There's plenty when it comes to the issues and the challenges that we can discuss. You don't always have to go on the attack into things that it's not worth criticizing, because it's common practice. This is what is done. This is how people use their money. Establish a foundation, have legitimate tax deductions, use that money ideally judiciously, right? Ideally with a sense of stewardship, that this is what you're going to do with the foundation money. And many foundations have very strict guidelines when it comes to missional types of activity, and they only fund certain things. They only fund certain programs. They only develop certain programs. But it's a beautiful, quite frankly, beautiful process of individuals, I believe, trying to do what they believe is right, to realize that they've been blessed, again, use the system's advantages. Mark Cuban, I don't know if you saw the video, he was talking about how he encourages his tax attorneys to take advantage, he said, and then he said, well, to use the system that's there. But he encourages his tax guys to undoubtedly find legitimate tax deductions, but even said, you know what, there's been plenty of times I've just had to write big checks, and it takes him 45 minutes, as he says, to sign all of his tax documents. Yeah, the guy's got a zillion companies. He's got he's funding a ton of things and making a ton of cash. He's got taxes to pay. There's no doubt. And, you know, when you hear someone like Donald Trump in this debate say it's just smart business practices. Well, if we were all so smart, there would be no contribution. And I'm not necessarily the government according to Robin Hood type of philosophy that's out there that says the rich need to pay their share and they need to give back in this kind of systematized and institutionalized redistribution of wealth. That is not what I'm about. But there should be a social responsibility that says, you know what, there's legitimacy in paying taxes, there's legitimacy in establishing foundations and not paying taxes on the money that's deducted there and using that for the common good and using it for real opportunities in communities that need that type of funding. That's okay. That's okay. My greater concern is when somebody's always trying to buck the system. That's all you're doing. You got legitimate opportunities. You don't need to buck everything. You don't need to always look for ways to skirt and get around what it is that everyone else seems to be doing, right? I mean, I think there's a tremendous amount of character revealed just in that one statement that we heard in the debate the other night that, yeah, it's smart. That's just smart business practice, whatever Trump said. So, again, I would hope, regardless of what you, if you believe in the causes, if you believe in what they support or not, is insubstantial, is what I'm trying to say. There's not, in my opinion, in this particular situation, it's not a concern. What they're doing is legitimate, and you could say what Trump is doing is legitimate as well, because he's cleverly finding ways to shelter his income and some sort of tax write-off. There are people who intentionally have losing businesses that operate at a loss, so there's a way to shelter taxes there. If that's all you're doing, if you're at a point where you have to work that hard to buck the system, maybe just own up. But I don't, is there a Trump Foundation? I have to research that. I'll look up that on the break, because I don't know what Donald Trump is necessarily doing charitably to have something that could potentially offer something for others. I don't know what that looks like. I really don't know. I don't, you know, we heard a lot about tax returns and releasing those, and he's making the bargain with Hillary. If she releases her emails, he'll release his tax returns, which again, you know, he called on the Russian government essentially to hack into those emails. And now he's saying that Hillary needs to make them public, I guess, release them. Well, we know that there were, the concern was the fact that it was an unsecure server and we've got classified information and top secret information passing through that server that could have easily been hacked. So I don't think we need to see emails of classified information. Just saying. Interesting dynamics. Back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Back, I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. I mentioned the Al Jazeera news video, and you Say what you will about Al Jazeera. I don't know if you pay attention to it. It's got a lot of quality stuff, like The Atlantic. I think it's a really news, journalistic, there's an ethic. There's an ethic that's there, and I appreciate it. I appreciate their ethic. And one of the things that they presented in this, kind of famous for these subtitled or, CG'd, lots of text in the video, video features with, big bold text asking questions or making statements in the video. And this particular one asking, where was Syria? Where was Syria in the debate? And why didn't we hear anything about this? And, Syria is a serious issue. We got a humanitarian crisis. We've got a international security crisis. We know that there's, I would venture to guess, the largest central focus of ISIS operatives in Syria. And that's a real guess. That's a real guess, because we know that ISIS is now partnered with Boko Haram, and I can't recall the Asian arm of this caliphate extreme Islamic expression, but they're out there in a lot of different ways. And but nonetheless, Syria has kind of been where they've headquartered themselves for some time. And you look at the strife, again, just the humanitarian catastrophe that is there. And we went for 90 minutes without ever mentioning that. Now, you could say, well, Holt never said anything about that. He didn't bring it up. So therefore, it didn't get mentioned. There was, we talked a little bit about the vacuum of Iraq and a little bit of foreign policy on Iran's nuclear development and the deals here and there. But it was so, I think, sadly lacking. I would agree. As a sad, sidestep or overlook of certainly international humanitarian crisis, and really didn't get into that. I don't even know that there was much talk on immigration, much talk on refugees. I'm trying to recall what I heard in that respect. We didn't hear the wall mentioned at all, which that was refreshing for me that we could go through that much time with Trump and not have to hear about the wall and how Mexico is going to pay for it. But still, I think there was just an omission. I would agree that we missed an opportunity. Now, granted, there are two more, and this is something I've talked about extensively, that we will have forgotten. Like, I'm sitting here going, was that even mentioned? Did we talk about that? Just 2 days later, we're going to forget. We're going to forget all about this first debate pretty quickly. We're going to get to the town hall with Anderson Cooper. We'll see how that one rides out. I think that, when you're in a town hall dynamic, it can generally temper the aggressive candidate. So this might be another opportunity for Clinton to do well. We'll see what happens. But I think I may be wrong about this. And as I've said, there are plenty of things that I am wrong about and will be wrong about. But the third debate might be Trump's shining moment. And with Wallace, who could potentially come through as kind of the anti-Holt, if you will. If you thought that Holt was tough on Trump and easy on Clinton, you might see the exact difference with Chris Wallace. Again, it's the best opportunity a conservative, and believe me, I know you, there are those, every time I say that about Trump, they're like, well, he's not really a conservative. Okay, whatever. He's your Republican nominee. That's who he is. He's your Republican nominee. Clinton is your Democrat nominee. I know there are plenty in both camps who are just accepting that, but you have to accept it. That's who you have. But we might find that with Wallace being a more conservative-leaning journalist from the Fox News Network, it could be all Trump's, it could be softballs going his way. And a real opportunity to shine. Should that happen, that could be the tide turner leading into November, and we'll soon find out. So it's not over yet. And I've heard everything from, Trump was astounding and won this debate. I don't know who they saw, but I've heard those kind of things, that he was expertly where he needed to be, to even those who support Trump saying, no, he was off his game and it wasn't what we wanted to see. Trump himself making a couple of excuses. He's saying that he had mic problems, which apparently was the sniffling thing constantly. He's also saying that he was holding back. There was some restraint. There was some reserve. He had tempered himself. Therefore, he wasn't coming out in full swing, which I said. It didn't look like the Trump that we've seen in the primaries, but I also said he's got to do that. If he comes out swinging hard against Clinton, I think that that could damage him more because of the simple, it came up in the debate, the fact that he's labeled a misogynist. He has and does say disparaging things about women and the way they look, even talking about Clinton. She doesn't have the look. And he turns it into, well, it's about stamina. So, bizarre things of that nature. And it doesn't necessarily play well if he's constantly aggressively focused in that attack mode, especially to a woman. And now there are those who are like, well, it's Hillary Clinton, she can take it, or it is who it is. But this is, there's no decorum there. There's no class. Where's the class in doing something of that nature? And I guess some may argue, is this a guy who's known for keeping it classy? I don't think so. So what are you worried about? But I want to keep it classy, right? I want us to have even if they're just candidates now, keep it classy. I want a classy president. I don't want someone who is going to make negative statements about women and make misogynistic references. Why would we want that? But anyway, back to the excuses. So reserved, mic problems, you name it, whatever. We've heard Trump say all of this, and now there's the recent speculation that Lester Holt had some sort of coaching going on, the producers in the back saying, hey, ask about this, get this, and fact-checking and giving him information because of the stop and frisk. And well, Holt's a journalist who covers a lot of stories. I know what it's like when you consume a lot of media. You retain a lot of media. You retain a lot of that information. And you may not be able to go, specifics, but you can remember, stop and frisk was declared unconstitutional. We'll all remember that now because Holt said it. And I don't think it's that hard to say, he had that information at hand. And maybe he expected it. Maybe he researched some things and was prepared for whatever that was going to come out of those questions, which he'd hoped that a moderator would do. But it's certainly true that anyone can recall and have relatively quickly available information that they've known about, because especially in the world of journalism, because you cover so many things, you discuss so many things, you present so many things, God willing, you're going to remember some of that. And when it comes out that way, that's not out of the question to have that immediate recall. Now, the other criticism that I've heard is that Holt apparently called Trump a liar on the stop and frisk. I went back, checked it, and no name calling there. He says, no, you're wrong. That was declared unconstitutional. He corrects him, but a fraternal correction, even a firm fraternal correction, is not an insult. It's really not. And you can tell someone that they're wrong without it being insulting. You can tell someone that what they are saying is incorrect, and it doesn't have to be insulting. Let's put it that way. You call somebody a liar, that's an insult. Well, you're just You're lying. That's a lie. That's not what Holt said. He said, no, you're wrong. Which, there are those who heard it and thought, well, that correction is insulting, and he's calling my candidate a liar. Not the case. Not what happened. So, well, you know, I can't believe I'm still talking about this, but obviously it was a big enough impact, and I think there's still a lot of talk about it. It was a historic moment. We know that, as far as these two individuals coming together and the first woman on a debate stage of this the size and scale ever, and then to kind of watch it play out the way it played out. There's a lot of things to unpack. Excuse me. There's more that we could discuss, but we'll try to switch gears so we move into more interesting things, perhaps. Although I'm still talking about it, so I'm interested. Obviously, more to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. I posted a video over there from MSNBC, and this is a mother of a black police officer talking about institutionalized racism, talking about how apparently Governor Pence has said, look, we wouldn't even need to talk about this. Why would we waste our time in bringing up something so divisive? Right, and I think that we hear that in other circles with other divisive topics. Abortion comes immediately to mind. That's one that people don't want to talk about. It's divisive. God, no. Too much polarization there. Let's not even go there. There are those who feel that way. And to consider not discussing institutionalized racism because it makes us uncomfortable, or it makes us, we just think that there's more important stuff. I don't know. Move on, get over it. That's what we hear all the time. Move on, get over it. Just come on. Just do this other thing, whatever that is. Let's play this new game on the phone. I don't know. Which, yeah, by the way, I say, if you got time to play a game on your phone, wow, where did that time come from? I don't know that kind of time. Not that I want to play games on my phone, quite frankly. I played a little duck game with my 4-year-old because he was trying to figure out how to play it, and my 9-year-old plays it, and it's this weird thing where you got to train your duck and then feed the duck and then race the duck. And I got to admit, as I was trying to teach my son this game, I was playing it, and I thought, oh, man, I need to get another duck. You know, this duck, I just got one. I just got one duck. Get an egg, I'd hatch a duck and train it. You know, I mean, for a moment there, I was thinking, well, I need to do that. I need to, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to get all in. Go all in. Get a bunch of ducks. Yeah. Fast ducks. I'll win all the races. So it captured me for a moment, and I thought, what the heck am I doing? I got to get out of this world. So I know, I mean, it happens, but why would you do that? So we distract ourselves. Is that what I was talking about? Now I'm distracted. I don't even know. Where were we? We were talking about institutionalized racism, and we're talking about this idea of we just think it's as simple as ignoring it. Just ignore it. Ignore it. It never happened. It's not happening. We don't talk about it. Nothing there. So I was kind of I guess, challenged recently to identify what institutionalized racism is. And first off, I think that there's something about accepting and owning up to the fact that we're all racist. We all are. I'm sorry. It's kind of like we're all scared of heights. I remember this illustration once. I think it may have been a psychology class. Don't recall exactly what it was, but the teacher asked, who in the classroom is afraid of heights? And some of the hands went up immediately, and some said, okay, great. So who's zero fear? No way. You got no fear of heights whatsoever. And another handful of hands went up. And so the teacher called this student up and said, okay, stand here and let's think about this illustration. So you're on a 1 foot square. So squeeze in here. You're on a 1 foot square and you're on a pole. And I'm going to elevate that square up about 5 feet. Not too bad, huh? You're okay with that? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. Good. No fear of height then. 5 feet. No, everything's fine. Good. Okay. So I'm going to elevate this up 10 feet. 10 feet. How you doing? You okay with that? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. What if I take that thing up 100 feet in the air, 300 feet, 1,000 feet? There's going to come a point where you are fearful. You are, and legitimately so, you should be, if you're standing on a 1 foot platform. There should be a fear there. Well, while there's no reason to fear those of other races, I think that we can and we do, and we can find ourselves in situations that really make us uncomfortable if we really think about it. You know, I'm blessed to have been to a couple of World Youth Days, and you've heard me talk about this and refer to it frequently, but there was something about, it's one thing to travel to another country, and travel is great, and it's going to expand your experience, and you're going to learn that people are people. That's a beautiful thing. But man, when you put 1.5 million people together from all the heck across this globe, with every language imaginable, with every ethnicity, and you see the globe in its glory, you see God's children, all shapes, sizes, races, you name it, all together. It's just it will change your perspective. It changed everything for me seeing that the first time, and then experiencing it again. I was blessed to have done that a couple of times, and there's nothing like that experience to truly realize the oneness of the global community. And you know, I've been criticized for being, I've been called a globalist. No, I'm not a globalist. I'm a Catholic. There's something very different. We see a both and approach, right? We talk about the global solidarity and the subsidiarity that has to take place on the local level. And if we don't do that, and if we don't stand arm in arm, and if we don't somehow try to combat the challenges that are there from the institution, and again, you're looking at a group of people who were considered property at one point in our nation's history, which wasn't that long ago, I'm sorry, wasn't that long ago, and a group of people who even when they got beyond property and the Emancipation Proclamation went through, still a long, long time before they were recognized as full citizens. And you think about that and, wow, you know, that's not that long ago. We have institutionalized racism because it's ingrained. We have something in our culture that says there's a reason to fear certain people, or a reason to assume that they're inferior, or a reason to have suspicions. You know, that's all racism. And it's there. And then you look at systemic issues that have kept people from opportunity or profiling that happens that creates challenges for individuals because of what happens. Yeah, that takes place. That's real. It's real. And, you know, people talk about police shootings and they say, well, you know, black officers kill black criminals or suspects, whatever, or you know, victims, I don't know how you want to categorize it. And yes, but that does not mean that that's still not a racially, that the beginnings of that, the underpinnings of that, don't have some sort of racial overtones. You know, we talked a moment ago about the stop and frisk and this discussion coming up in the debate, and you know, there was a tremendous amount of racial profiling that happened because of that program. And you could say, well, you know, crime went down. Is that how we measure anything? Well, if we get good results, who cares how you get there? No, that's not Catholic moral theology. That's not what we look at. We say, can we add up this equation morally? Is the object, the intent, and the outcome, are they all completely moral? If they are, we got a moral decision. But if any one of those slightly veers from the utmost, highest degree of moral measurement, then we got a problem. We got a problem. So we can't say, okay, well, crime went down, but you know, we shook down a lot of innocent individuals and just profiled the heck out of them because they look suspicious. Therefore, we could stop and frisk them and find out if they're up to no good. Yeah, see, that doesn't work. And don't give us the code, law and order. That's what we're talking about, law and order. Come on, let's talk about people. Let's talk about healing people, finding solutions, looking at the systemic issues, looking at the actual issue and not just symptoms of the issue. Let's get into this stuff. Let's find ways to eradicate it. Now, time, God willing, will heal this wound of institutionalized racism, but it wasn't that long ago when blacks were subpar, sub-people, property, and God willing, we've come a long way, but we are not healed from that. We're not healed from that. And do not ever say, move on and get over it, whatever. It's you're insulting in the same fashion as saying all lives matter and just pretending like someone's experience is not real. Their experience is real. Their history is real. This is their reality. We don't do a good job of stepping into anyone else's reality. We don't do a good job of getting outside of ourselves ever. We just don't. But we have, I think now, almost like never before, I don't know. There's never been a time such as now. It's a true statement right at this moment, tomorrow, next week. There's never been a time such as now. And when you see that we could really, if we tried, we could turn the tide. I think it's got to take people recognizing the challenges that are out there and really addressing them, regardless of who's in the White House. Doesn't matter. That really does not matter with these kind of issues. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.